Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, reminding you to head over to mightyparenting.com to get your free email series on communicating with your teen, as well as to see what other support we have for you there. I am excited to be jumping into a new year, and at this time of year, we all kind of tend to take stock of our lives, whether you're doing New Year's resolutions or not. We kind of tend to look at it and go, what's working, what's not. It's just sort of that time of fresh starts and new beginnings, and it is definitely worth taking a moment to take stock of our lives. I know that I'm definitely doing that this year. In fact, I'm doing a little bit more than normal. I recently expanded my presence in the local community where I live here in St. Joseph. And so I need to be very thoughtful and intentional about how I want to continue with that while still working with my clients remotely and making sure that I squeeze out every last little drop of joy from this time with my kids. If you're a regular listener, you know that they are getting ready to fly the nest. And so I find that every moment just is so important to me. And so I'm in this thing of going, well, okay, you know, how do I teach them at this point in their lives where they're making a lot of decisions and setting up what their life's going to look like? How do I teach them to do that so they have what we tend to call a good work-life balance, right? So that they can really enjoy their life. For me and for them, when does work end? When does family time start? How do I continue to give back to my community while still working with more clients in my case? How do I make sure that I can still be there for my husband and my kids, especially as the girls are going through these exciting, stressful, crazy times in their lives? You know, you think, oh, they're in their 20s. They don't need me anymore. I was chatting with today's guest before the show. We were saying that, you know, as our kids are in their teens and 20s, these are actually the most challenging times we've had parenting them. No, they still need us. It's just a little different, right? So all these questions, these are age-old questions, ones that I work with my clients to answer. And today we have another expert who I love her work. Her name is Dana Look-Aramoto, and she is with us to give us her fresh perspective on work-life balance and how we can get off the gerbil wheel and enjoy our life. Dana is an author. She's the author of Stop Settling, Settle Smart, Rethinking Work-Life Balance, Redesign Your Busy Life. She is obviously an author. She's a coach, a speaker, and the founder of the leadership and executive coaching company, Phoenix Fifth, and SettleSmart.com. She is also behind the mindset method and movement of Stop Settling, which aims to end the myth of work-life balance by having us focus on the integration of the various facets of life and conscious prioritization. So Dana, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you for having me, Sandy.
You know, as we were chatting beforehand, and I mentioned there, I'm just so excited to be having a conversation with someone who is so in alignment with what I also teach for my clients and my speaking. So I really enjoy your work. And before we get into some of the specifics of, oh, what is it and how can we do things better, I wanted to start first by going and looking at kind of the flip side of that, I guess you could say. So, you know, when we are running around crazy, running on that gerbil wheel from the time that our eyes open and staying on there until our heads hit the pillow at night, what happens to us?
Yeah, we are depleted. We are absolutely running low on battery. And what happens when we spread ourselves that thin is that these trade-offs that you talked about in your opening part of the show happen to us involuntarily and unconsciously versus we are in the driver's seat of our life making the choices.
That, I think, honestly, is the absolute bottom line, is that concept of it happens to you whether you think about it and do something about it or not. I mean, you're going to, as you say, you're going to make trade-offs. But what you said there was just so beautiful. It's like, well, you can make them unconsciously or you can be in the driver's seat.
Yes, it's interesting. When I was working on my book, a lot of the early feedback, even though I am very interested in working with women and moms and executive women and women of all ages that are looking to shape their life differently, some of the men that were reviewing the book said, well, what about me? I'm depleted too. And the more I did my research, the more I found this is a pretty universal issue.
And I'm so glad you say that, because that's one of the other things I find too, is the guys get left out. You know, here at Mighty Parenting, we are talking to all parents. And while we know that the majority of our listeners and our community are women, we do have a number of fathers who are here tuned in because they care too. They love their kids. They want their kids to have a good life. They want to have a good life. And I think sometimes they get left out. So when you talk to men and found out, yes, this is a universal problem, did you find any differences between what the men and the women were experiencing in terms of this?
Yes, it almost as if the desire to be great parents and to do it all and have it all and be your all was similar. The men tended to have less guilt than the women. And I don't know if that's anthropology and back to hunting and gathering, but that also seems to be a theme that I detect in working with both men and women who are working parents, especially when there's dual working parents at home.
Well, and some of that I would imagine too is culturally. Men and women have, over the years, there have been different expectations about that. And we're in the first couple of generations of it being normal and acceptable and common to have two working parents in a household or to have working moms. So we're still kind of figuring that out as a culture and a society. And don't you think that's going to impact us individually?
Absolutely. Even stay-at-home dads, which, you know, is more and more common these days, but 10, 20 years ago wasn't common at all.
Yeah. And I think that's really hard on dads, honestly. We talk a lot, again, about women and on the working side and women arguing with, you know, themselves and each other about working and not working. But I think there's still a lot of, maybe it's not that the guys experience the guilt as much, but my totally personal thought, and this isn't even anecdotal information, this is just a thought in my head, is that the stay-at-home dads would deal with a lot more of the emotional issues of identity and value than, and I know stay-at-home moms deal with that too. I know that was, you know, a challenge for me during the time I stayed home, but I think personally that it's harder for dads. My husband did that for a while. He decided to quit his job in corporate America as an engineer, and he was so stressed out that I told him, I'm like, you know, I want to try starting my own business. So why don't you take some time off? You homeschool our two kids and I will try this. And I know that those were some big issues for him.
Yes. And you're right. We all struggle with identity. I mean, what happens is if we get too wrapped up in the one big area of work or career, then what happens to the rest of the pieces and how we identify with them? So for example, if somebody has a really strong career and yet they get laid off, not because of anything they've done and not because they're being fired, but because the company's doing a relocation or they've bought another company and your role becomes redundant. I have a lot of clients that struggle with having an identity crisis when that happens, as if it was something they did wrong. So this is a complex topic, isn't it?
It is. It's a huge topic. And I think that leads beautifully into what you teach. You talked about, you know, the different facets of our life and that we can get too caught up in one of them. And I think that is part of that problem in some of those stereotypes and cultural things, is that when we start pigeonholing ourselves or other people, that happens. So let's talk a little bit about what the way you see our lives, these facets that we keep mentioning. Can you talk a little bit about what the Settle Smart concept is?
Sure, I would love to. So regardless of gender, socioeconomic status, you know, where you grew up, US or abroad, we all have the same five life facets. They are career, family, friends, society, and vitality, your own health and wellness and self-care. And in the society facet, we look at things that people identify with individually, like community or church or giving back. So these are very broadly defined terms so that everyone identifies that, yes, I have all five of those inside my life gem. And that's where we start to look at work-life balance being a myth. It's not work or life. Life is the wrapper around the five. The settling smart component starts with stop settling unconsciously and involuntarily in terms of where you spend time and where you get joy and productivity and value in these facets. And if we're trying to be in all facets at all times and what I call never settling, meaning full on, full steam ahead, run like that gerbil in the wheel, sprint inside of a marathon, all five at once, because you're trying to have it all at one time, burnout is around the corner.
Okay. That was an interesting concept, and I paused because when I took your online quiz, it was very interesting to me that I had a mental shift I needed to make around this concept of settling and would I be willing to settle in an area of my life. And there was this fight inside me going, no, I don't want to settle. Why would I settle when it comes to my family? Why would I settle when it comes to my work? I'm passionate about my work. You know, why would I settle when it comes to my society, my community piece, you know? And it was just, it took a little bit to wrap my mind around the idea that, wait, this isn't even a bad thing.
Yes, you got it. And that is the entire premise of the quiz and the book. And when I speak in front of audiences or do podcasts like this, which are so important beyond my own coaching practice, which, you know, one-on-one is fantastic. You get to really help people transform. There's not a lot of reach. And so people really need to get it that settling is not a bad word. Burnout's a bad word. Yeah. And so I'm trying to get rid of this whole notion that, you know, you can have everything at one time and instead make these trade-offs, which provide an integrated life. And in some cases, you're blending some of the facets. You're blending time with your family and friends. You're blending time even with potentially your work and with your family, not just on, you know, bring your kid to work day. There are amazing companies culturally that are making this shift, just like you made for yourself. Well, companies have to make a cultural shift as well to encourage and support people and community coming together into the workplace.
And you mentioned burnout, and that is something that I do worry about, especially for our kids, because after all these years of downsizing and, again, shifts in our society and our culture, and I just recently read an article about vacation time and how many companies have created a culture where it is frowned on to take vacation time, even if they offer paid vacation time, or they actually kind of pit employees against each other. So if one person's on vacation, they set it up so that the other employees have to take on their workload instead of having someone come in to handle it or whatever they needed to do. And I worry about that. I watch one of my girls, she's going into an accounting field, and as everybody knows, accountants have busy season. And she already worked one of those as an intern. And for about a month, she was working 90-hour weeks. And just the fact that, you know, this is the culture and this is what's accepted and this is what's expected. And I'm concerned that as we design our lives and as we teach our kids about designing their lives, that we start teaching them about these facets and the settling and the come and go. Because if you're trying to work 90 hours a week and do everything you do in these other areas, you're not going to last a month.
Exactly. It's just a recipe for disaster. And when companies and managers and leaders expect it, you already know you may be at a crossroads. So my number one advice, especially in the career facet, is do not join a company with a culture that expects a 90-hour work week all year long. Now, you're right, mm-hmm. seasonally and tax. I spent 23 years in an executive type of setting in various companies, including being a CEO myself. There are situational relative changes that happen inside of companies that are explainable, but a perpetual 90-hour work week, for sure. You know, you think about an attorney with billable hours, they may do that, but then you're right, something else has to give. And so then they might get to put their poker chips in facet two, which may be family, for example, but they're not gonna have time for friends, they're not gonna have time for society, and they're most likely gonna trade off their own time for their own health and wellness and self-care. And that is even more scary and dangerous for our up and coming workforce and our young people that are going to ideally change the world. They need energy to do it.
Yes, they definitely do that. And that also flipped me back to the parent side of it, because I see parents, and that is the first thing they give up, is the vitality piece. If life is busy, the first thing that goes is self-care. Because, well, actually, I want to know your thoughts. Why do you think that is?
I still struggle with it. I always like to say I'm a work in progress. And one of my two daughters, when I told her I was going to quit my position as a CEO and go out on my own to start a solopreneurship and do this work as my life's work, she said, well, good. It's about time you practice what you preach. So
they do that to us, don't they? I mean, they just, boom, they hone right in on the point and tell us, like, yeah, you're not practicing what you preach. Okay, that's funny.
Brutally honest. If you want to know what's up, you ask your kids, because they will just tell you. They will rip that Band-Aid right off. So I struggle with it to this day, although I have more flexibility today than I've ever had. But I'm still traveling. I'm still coaching 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day, depending on the day. I do work the way I want to work, when and where and how I want to work, which is a revelation. I'm going to be 52. So, you know, it took a long time to get there, both in terms of building the confidence to do it, having the right situation financially to do it, having been a single mom for 11 years. I mean, we're talking about a whole life's story here. You can read the book, I suppose, and find out more about what I went through in my journey. But today I do have more conscious trade-off time and more flexibility. However, I still struggle with that a little bit as a working parent. And my girls are almost 16 and 20. Actually, 16 today. Isn't that funny what I just said? My daughter's birthday's today. And I'm still saying almost 16. Perhaps I'm not ready.
No, we never really are we? So you mentioned something in there. You mentioned the idea of having more time and flexibility to make to design your life, to make your trade-offs, to flow back and forth. Something that surprised me, both when I had a period in my life where I was a stay-at-home mom, and I have this period in my life where I'm an entrepreneur and working in various ways and facets. And in both of those times, I have a lot of time and flexibility. And I shouldn't say time, because it's, you know, we all have the same time. It's how we're choosing to use it, right? But I have a lot of flexibility. And yet I find that when I have more flexibility, when my schedule is not as full, it's actually more difficult to meet my needs in all these different areas, to do all these things I want to do. It's a strange phenomenon. And I'm wondering if you've encountered that before with clients where, you know, there's kind of like too many choices, too much opportunity, too much time.
Yes, so that's really where I suggest you take my quiz because it's short, it's quick, it's free. We don't really know what we want because there are so many things on top of our head that we believe we should do. We've been told that, we've seen it in the public domain, we grew up that way, and so we get very cloudy in terms of what we really want. And when we take everything away and we just say, okay, Sandy, you and all your listeners, voila magic, all of you now have a magic wand of your own and an endless bucket of money. We're going to have an Oprah moment. Everybody's going to be crazy happy because yay, we have no boundaries. What is it you really want in terms of where you want to spend your time? And since we're talking about time, I'll just remind you, like Laura Vanderkam, I love her book on 168 hours, we only have 168 hours in the week. And again, that ties us as humanity together. No one has more than anybody else. We all have the same amount of hours every week. And where and how do you spend that time beyond sleep? Ideally, you're sleeping. And then you can put those chips in each of those facet areas of your life's gem, in terms of career, family, friends, society, vitality.
And sleep, that's part of vitality, correct?
Yes.
Does anybody ever say, you have 168 hours in a week. How often does someone go, oh, okay. So let's see, 7 times 8 is 56. So I'm going to take 56 of those hours and put them to sleep. What's the first thing that people do when they go, oh, 168 hours in a week. How do I want to spend this time?
Yeah, no one ever starts with sleep. And when I do this exercise with my clients, I always start with sleep. First of all, it is so important for our vitality, and we're not sleeping enough societally. Just by the way, quantitatively, there's a lot of science behind this. You can read Arianna Huffington's book about sleep. If you sleep less than 4 hours a night, you're either going to make yourself very, very sick and shorten your lifespan, or you're in the 4th percentile of humanity that is actually able to get away with less than 4 hours of sleep a night. We think serial entrepreneurs are okay to not sleep, like, you know, an Elon Musk waking up at 2 a.m. to go to work. That's actually not true. So here's a big public service announcement for your audience. Please get enough sleep, 7 to 8 hours per night, and put that first on your list under vitality. It feeds all the other facets, and it's actually performance enhancing. And I coach CEOs, and let me tell you, we arm wrestle virtually about that all the time.
I imagine that you do. And it's been interesting to me. So regular listeners know that my husband struggles with some mental health issues. And one thing I have seen absolutely clearly, and then I started looking at other people and noticing it myself and other people in my life, no matter what their station or situation. And when we don't get enough sleep, everything else suffers. Now, depending on your own capacity and your own schedule and things like that, you may be able to hide it. But you're putting a lot more energy into doing everything that you do because you just didn't get enough sleep.
To me, it's as important as drinking water. It is so mission critical. And for those of us, including myself, that struggle with insomnia, which I definitely feel is a mental health issue, we have to find a way to do what is best for ourselves, to feed the other facets. And so that is what I like to call me before we. And let's face it, parents are struggling with that universally.
So unpack that a little bit for us when you talk about me before we, and then in particular with parents.
Sure. So we've all, well, not everyone, most of us have sat on an airplane. And when they say, put your oxygen mask on before helping others, and they give you the demo every single time, it's not because it's fun for the flight attendants to be ignored or, you know, looking at people who are all head down in their phone. It's a safety scenario with a zero risk tolerance for failure. So we have got to put ourselves first when it comes to self-care in order to have any energy or time left to give to others. And when we do it in the opposite way, which is what most parents tend to do, let me take care of the kids, and then let me take care of my spouse or partner if I have one, and then let me take care of everybody at work, and then let me take care of people out in the community, and let me go take care of my rescue dogs. And oh, wow, there's nothing left for me. My 168 hours is depleted. There's zero left. I guess I'll get zero this week. We're completely backward and upside down in terms of how we're designing our life. And I wish it were actually that prescriptive, because it's easier to make the change if you chose to live that way in the first place. More, it's by default. You're just kind of on autopilot acting that way. So today, for the new year, I would highly urge you to change one thing, and even just 1 hour a week that you dedicate to you doing whatever it is you love.
Oh, I like that. It's not dedicate 1 hour to getting healthier or any specific thing. It's doing something you love, because that's going to re-energize you.
Yes.
I really, really like that. It's funny, because one of the stories that I like to share when I talk to people who are having a really difficult time with the concept of putting themselves before their kids or their spouse or their extended family, if they're a caretaker for a parent, whatever. And it's not that you're putting yourselves before them. It's that taking care of you is part of taking care of them. And again, with my family, one of the things we've learned is that when mama ain't happy, it's true. Nobody's happy. Now, that's also true when it's, you know, when it's dad, but at least in our house, I tend to lead that pack more. So if I don't get enough sleep and I'm tired, I'm going to be grumpier. I am going to be more rushed because I can't do things as quickly. All those things trickle down, and they make my kids and my husband not function as well, not feel as good. So I tell people, even if you won't do it for you, do it for them. Your thing about putting on the oxygen mask, taking that 1 hour a week for yourself. If you can't do it for yourself, do it for your family. And Dana, you know, you said about your daughter pointing out, going, oh, finally, you know, you're doing what you preach, taking your own advice. And I think that we'll find similar reactions when we do something like this, that our kids will tend to go, finally, you're going to take care of you.
This is so incredibly real for me right now, because my daughters are now 16 and almost 20 in February. And every time we talk about this subject, that's what they say. You give to others before you give to yourself. It's what they love about me. And it's also what worries them. And if we all worry less, we have a better life experience. And so it also sends a real message to people that love you, that you do also come first. It isn't always just giving without receiving. And if you're inside of a company and going to work, or you manage people at work, it also is important, because people follow what we do and not what we say. So if we want our kids to get it, and we want our teams at work to get it, and we want our community friends and family members to get it, we've got to give a little bit to ourselves and really fill our energy reserve by design and not default.
Oh, okay. So I have to write this down. Fill our energy reserve by design and not by default. Because if it's default, what happens?
You're back into involuntary and unconscious trade-offs, which is not settling smart.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, you're talking about filling an energy reserve. I don't think we would even be able to fill it up most of the time. I mean, we might trickle in, but I don't think we'd ever fill it if we're not consciously making the choices that you teach us to make.
That is a really good way of saying it. And many of us do spiritual work and we think about filling our cup. I like to say reserve. And the reason I do that is, to me, it's such a clear example that I use with my daughters about driving. Not that they're driving yet. I wish they were. I was telling Sandy that before we got started. I was lamenting, actually. They're learning to drive and getting there. But if the car doesn't have enough gas, we know what's going to happen.
Nobody's going anywhere.
Then you're waiting on the side of the road, or you're calling for AAA. I mean, it's a mess. And life is messy enough without co-creating that mess.
And I love the way you talked about how what we do is teaching. It's teaching our employees, our teams. It's teaching our bosses. It's teaching our kids. And two of the messages in there is, you, like you said, you know, we're showing them that they need to just give, 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 and never receive. Well, you're going to have a bunch of depleted people around you, which isn't what you want. The other thing, one of the issues that we hear about from parents is that their kids aren't respecting them. And when you were talking about that and how this idea of taking care of yourself fits in there, it reminded me that then we're teaching them that I'm not important. You are more important than I am. I am here to fulfill your every need and your every wish. And how can we complain then when that's the message they receive?
It's a very important reminder to myself. I will replay this and listen to it. That's part of the recipe that I've created in my own life. And some of it is that working parent, or in my case, for a long time, I am remarried, single mother guilt. And guilt is not an emotion. It's just not. It doesn't have an equal opposite. Like, you know, you're really sad, or you're really happy, or you're terrified, or you're bold. Guilt just is more guilt on the other side. It's very manipulative. It's very manufactured. It's passed down sometimes generationally and culturally. And so we have got to dump the guilt. And you're right. If we want respect, we have to respect ourselves. And we are not respecting ourselves if we're running ourselves like a gerbil running a sprint inside of a marathon. And by the way, just for the visual, balancing on top of the teeter-totter. Because that's actually what we're doing, trying to get to that nirvana state of perfect equilibrium. And I don't know about you, Sandy, I have no idea what that is.
Oh, no. I love the way you discuss these areas of our lives, and in that you say there is no such thing as work-life balance. I love that message that you share. And can you tell us why you say that?
Well, I tried for almost 28 years to lead companies and help founders grow and sell their companies and work 60, 70, 80, sometimes 90 hours a week and provide for my family and my young daughters. I mean, I really thought that was the way, especially coming from Wisconsin to California 22 years ago. You know, my role models and the incredible women I was looking up to in Silicon Valley, like Sheryl Sandberg, incredible person, incredible woman, that was not going to be a sustainable model for me to try to just sort of balance everything at one time without having something give. And I used to get pneumonia every year. So that's how I knew depletion had happened. But I wasn't ahead of it, I was behind it. So again, default, not design.
So that's something else that happens, is when we aren't designing our life, making conscious choices, we become depleted. When we become depleted, we kind of touched on, without saying it specifically, that it impacts our relationships, and particularly with our kids and our spouse. It's going to impact our work. You just said it impacts our health. Are there, in that idea of going, oh, wow, you know, I'm struggling in some of these areas in my life. How do we get ahead of it?
Yes, we set ourselves up for success by making smart goals and smart choices. And for those of you that don't know the SMART acronym, I'll unpack it real quick. It's specific, measurable, achievable or attainable, pick any A you like in that genre, realistic, and time-based. We literally need to have a little mini design plan for our life, not by default, but by design, and that's how to do it.
But it's for our whole life. I mean, usually you hear people talk about SMART goals and it's about one specific thing. Like I'll hear people talking about it in terms of New Year's resolutions, or I'll hear them talking about it in terms of work goals. But you're talking about this for our whole life. So how does that apply to setting up a life, designing a life?
Yes. So that's where you decide which of those five facets serve you the most, bring you the most joy. They also have to bring value. Let's face it, most of us need to earn money. And so you have to situationally and relatively and individually for yourself, like a fingerprint, decide where am I going to spend that time? And then you're going to put the other facets either to the side, on a shelf, dust them off later. Maybe you don't want to spend any time at all doing stuff in society. Who's to say that's wrong? It's really your choice. It's your one life. And as you get good at making these decisions ahead of time as to where I'm going to spend time, does it bring me joy? Is there value, productivity? Then the SMART piece of it almost happens on autopilot. I noticed this with my clients that I've been working with for months or years. It happens on autopilot, and it's so great because all of a sudden you just make the choice on what's right for you, and no one gets upset with you. No one gets angry with you. No one says anything negative. Nobody says you should or you should not. And all of a sudden you're in that driver's seat and you find that there's all this space. And that's what you have to look forward to by making conscious, smart, settling choices.
Okay. And I think I misunderstood something there, because what I heard you say was find the facet that's going to serve you the most, bring you the most joy, provide the most value, and set the others on the shelf. I think I'm not understanding what you mean by that, because that sounds a lot like just hyper-focus on one area of our life.
Ah, I didn't explain that well. Let me backtrack. So find the one and then find the second and then maybe find the third. And then the other two have got to take a back seat, because all five at one time is right back in that wheel. There's absolutely room in your 168 hours when you take out the amount you sleep, ideally we'll say 56 hours. There's plenty of time for a couple, two, three of those facets to take a primary role. One is usually primary, one is usually secondary, and one is usually third or tertiary. But then number four and five, what you'll find when you're doing this work, you're spending very little, and in some cases, no time in those facets. Again, unless something shifts and you want to change the way you mix and match your facets situationally and relatively for you.
Okay. So let me make sure I got this now. So what you're doing is you're saying that, yeah, maybe all five will be handled in some capacity. So for example, we talked a lot about vitality in here, and you can take care of yourself without it being your primary facet. We just want to figure out what our primary and secondary possibly facets are so that we are focusing most of our time and energy in those areas. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. And it's okay. A default for most of us, because we want to or have to or both work in some capacity. And there are more dual income families today than we've ever seen in our lifetimes. And there's no chance that's going to change anytime soon because of the complexity, even the financial components of the way life works today. And so most people will just say default, I'm going to put a lot of time and energy into work. They may or may not love what they're doing, which is a different topic, but they're going to spend a lot of time in that capacity. And they're definitely going to sleep, ideally, you know, 7-8 hours a night. So what do they do with the rest of the time? And what I find is a lot of people have what I call obligatory family time. Obligatory family time is I must spend the rest of my time with my family because there's 25 hours left in my week. And then they leave zero for themselves. Or I have lots of clients, and I've gone through this myself. I don't know about you, where you spend time with friends that are really acquaintances. They aren't really close friends, but you feel like you should spend time with them because it's been a while. And what you'd really love to do with those 2, 3, 4 hours in the week is something for yourself. That's a great place to find time for you.
Yeah, I love that tip of finding that time there. And also remembering that saying, yes, I must spend time with my family is not going to be enjoyable family time. So again, going back to your idea of consciously creating, going, okay, how do I consciously want to spend time with my family? And in my work, when I talk to people, I talk about priorities of the heart. So even though you say, oh, I want family to be in my number one, but I have to put in all this time at work. In my world, that is family time in a sense, not family time that you're spending with them, but that's how you're taking care of your family. So even though you say my family is my number one priority, but I have to spend all this time at work, it's still fulfilling that priority. And I think that can help us when we have to work, or like you said, we're working at a job that we're not thrilled about, which yes, you can help us shift and move, but not in this interview. So let me go back and just ask one other thing though, before we wrap up. So we want our kids to get these concepts. We want our kids to design a life. We want them to be happy. So we want them to design a life that I was going to say has balance, and that's not exactly it, but you know, that works for them, that brings them that energy and joy and contentment. What do you recommend that we as parents of teens and 20 somethings, what can we do to help them with that?
So number one is lead by example. It's absolutely true with managing people at work, and it's absolutely true with being a healthy role model as a parent. Number two is have these conversations with them openly and frequently. Really help them figure out what they want, where they derive the most joy, productivity, and value, and then help them sift through the complexity of the choices. Sandy, you did such a great job of talking about integrating the way you contribute to your family by working. And that's the most important piece, is when you figure out where those priorities lie and where you want to spend the most time, integration really helps. So for example, my 20-year-old is a martial artist and a star athlete, and most of her friends are also in this particular sport of Brazilian jiu-jitsu with her. And some of the friends she met through that, and some she brought into it because it's such a common thread. That's where she relates and gets so much joy. So that's an integration of vitality for her, but it's also potentially career related. We'll see what happens. So there are ways to blend the different facets together, and teaching our children how to blend will keep them from feeling compartmentalized and bombarded and pulled in too many directions, because we think we're spread thin. Look at them.
They are. And you just switch out work for school. And boom, you know, that was one of the things when I was reading your book, that's how I saw it, was these principles apply to our kids and to us. But I love your advice that number one, we got to lead by example. And then two, we can have conversations about it. And us experiencing this and doing this helps those conversations, because then we can be honest and open about what our experience is in attempting to do this ourselves. So I really love that. I want to go back and just do kind of quick couple high points. So one of the things is you have told us that we're all settling, and most of us spend our time doing it unconsciously. What you teach us to do is to become conscious of it, to make the choices about what's going to get in our lives and what's not, so that we can be in the driver's seat and create a life that's beautiful. And that regardless of our gender, our geography, our age, that we all have these five elements: career, family, friends, society, and vitality, with the vitality being our health, our wellness, our self-care type of thing. And in addition to the concept of saying, hey, settle smart, we need to be aware that if we refuse to ever settle anywhere, then burnout is right around the corner. And I think that's super important to be aware of. So with our 168 hours in a week, you want us to decide exactly how we want to spend that time and start that with a little bit of vitality, of whether that's one of your core assets or facets or not. you know, we need to sleep, we need to eat, we need to hydrate, we need to do a little bit to take care of ourselves. And parents tend to really struggle with the concept of me before we. So we need to remember that it's important for us to put on that oxygen mask first, because if we pass out on the airplane, we can't help our child. So we definitely need to use these ideas and model it, because that's what we are teaching our kids. And for the new year, you said that what you would love us to do is to fill our energy reserve by design and not by default. And one step we can take toward that is to choose 1 hour a week to do something that fills us up. And Dana, there's so much great info here, but there's more in your book and on your website. So could you please share your website?
Yes, thank you. What an amazing summary. I may have to take you on the road with me. I don't think the listeners would like that. It's settlesmart.com.
Okay, great. And mighty parents, thank you so much for joining us here today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please rate and comment on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen. Visit mightyparenting.com to see all that we have to support you. And remember that you are a mighty parent. You've got this. And I will see you next week.